SBS Radio.
Afgelopen week hoorden we Henry van Zanden, de historicus en auteur, over zijn bezoek aan Nederland, waar hij zijn ogen uitkeek in onder andere Middelburg, Fort Rammekens, het oudste zeefort van West-Europa, en Lutjegast, de geboorteplaats van Abel Tasman. Want Abel Tasman, dat was eigenlijk de reden waarom Henry naar Nederland ging om zijn research te doen voor het boek 1642, Abel Tasman. Henry, nice to have you back on the show again. How are you?
Oh, very good, friends. Thank you very much.
And I was surprised you were saying, and that was the last bit of the chat we had, that there is hardly anything written and left here in Tasmania, in Australia, about Abel Tasman.
Well, I'm talking about the Maritime Museum in Tasmania.
Yep.
So I thought, I need to have a look at this. I walked in, and there was not a mention of Abel Tasman at all in the entire museum.
Yeah, so you are the first historian in Australia to write a book about Abel Tasman?
Oh, no, there have been plenty of people who've written books, but that's most of them are a very long time ago. But what I'm first at is discovering new things about Abel Tasman.
Tell me.
And explaining why, for instance, he couldn't land in Tasmania. Because everybody looks at that map and think, well, why didn't he land? So I went to Tasmania.
Yeah.
I took quite a powerful motorboat. And we went out, right out into the Southern Ocean. So it was extremely cold and choppy, and would have been very, very difficult for Abel Tasman's sailors there. Because it was already difficult for us, just sitting in a modern boat. The most noticeable thing was, if you go towards the Derwent from the Southern Ocean, the seas are very, very calm.
Yeah.
Or much calmer compared to the Southern Ocean.
Yeah.
And it's not as cold, not as windy, but the most amazing sight you'd ever see are the enormous cliffs. Now, these cliffs are almost sheer in some cases.
Yeah.
They go up up to a few hundred metres, like you had no idea. So the second highest cliffs in the Southern Hemisphere around the Bridley Island area, that's where you go into the Derwent River towards Hobart.
Yeah.
And the highest cliffs in the Southern Hemisphere are on the east coast of Tasmania. That's also where Abel Tasman went. So it was impossible to land. Now, he would have sailed up into Hobart or the Derwent River.
Yeah.
But a big storm came up. And you can't be getting too close to shore in a storm, because then you're going to run aground or run ashore somehow. Then he went around the southern peninsula of Tasmania, and when you get out in the Southern Ocean again and come into the east coast, you've got Tasman Island,
uh-huh.
And the cliffs there are enormous, and the cliffs on the other side are enormous. A lot of seals there as well, hundreds of seals, and we were just in awe at the sheer size and grandeur of these amazing cliffs. And anyone who wants to go to Tasmania, I really recommend that you go on one of those tours there that take you out. It was absolutely magnificent, and it's something I'll remember the rest of my life. So I took all those photos, by the way, they're in my book, and the photos are just so beautiful. And they've got sea stacks there. Now, a sea stack is just simply stone just coming straight up out of the water.
Oh.
In columns, and they're very, very high.
Very, very dangerous.
Yeah, and then I took one photo, and you don't really understand the enormity or the size of the sea stack, but when I took a close-up of it, you could see rock climbers up there. And until you see the rock climbers trying to climb up the sea stack,
oh, wow.
It's only then that you get to realise, wow, this is really, really huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so when he did land, he down at, you call it Frederick Henry Bay. That's near Blackmans Bay today.
Yeah.
That's what it's called today. That's the only place he could have landed, So that's obviously that's why he landed at the beginning of, I think, about the 2nd of November or something like that. And he didn't go ashore, but he sent his second-in-command and navigator and Fisher with some men.
Yeah.
But the very next day, Abel Tasman went ashore. Now, this is what most people don't realise. In most of the books, no one actually recognises, or very few people recognise, that Abel Tasman actually set foot on Tasmania.
And how did you find out?
Well, it's written in his journal. That's why. Because what lazy historians have done, they've taken an excerpt out of the journal.
Yeah.
That's the next day, in other words, which states that they were trying to get ashore, but the seas were too rough. So they sent the ship's carpenter with a flag ashore, when he put the flag up on what they call Monument Point now. And they believed he didn't get ashore, but that was the day after. The day before, he did get ashore at a place called Swan Lagoon, and I went there. And I was very lucky, because it's quite difficult to get there, because it's on private property.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw the winemaker there. I can't remember his name, but it's in the book. We sipped a nice bottle of Abel Tasman red.
Yeah.
And then he gave me the keys for about half a dozen locked gates to get through. And then we had to climb over this mountain. Well, not really a mountain, but a very large hill.
Yeah.
I then tried to find my way down into the beach, and that took quite some time because I got lost a little bit because I kept on going the wrong way. And it was just the timber and all the shrubs and everything was made it very difficult to get down there. But I got down there, and I could see exactly where Tasman would have been anchored and where he had come ashore, because he could only have walked one direction, that is where the Swan Lagoon is closest to the sea, and that's where he would have walked up towards that particular lagoon.
Okay.
And it didn't like the water, because the water was too salty. And the reason why it's salty, because when it's high tide, the high tide actually reaches into the lagoon.
Yeah.
And I could see where the sand was wet, how far that the water and the tide was going.
Yeah.
So I could see that. So I thought that was important, that I take a photograph of that, because as far as I'm aware of, I'm the only one who's taken a photograph of where Tasman had landed.
This is amazing news.
Yeah, yeah. And then he tried to, most people don't realise too, that he actually tried to go up the east coast of Australia, but he couldn't. People have got to remember that you've got a sailing ship.
Yeah.
A sailing ship doesn't always go where you want it to go.
No, you're wind dependent.
That's right, and if you want to go into the wind, you've got to tack left, you've got to tack right, and it's absolutely exhausting on the crew.
Yep.
In the end, they just gave up, because they were going north, and they said, well, okay, how about we discover New Zealand instead? No, he didn't say that.
No.
But they believed at that time, everybody believed, that the land extended from South America,
yeah,
diagonally, all the way up towards Australia.
Just one big landmass.
Yeah, and they call it Stuttenland because there's an island there called Stuttenland, but they didn't know it was an island. They thought that must have been the start of the landmass.
Right.
Because everybody believed that there had to be land there, because otherwise the earth would be out of balance. And just logically speaking, when you think about how much landmass is in the north,
uh-huh,
it's logical to think that there must be a lot of landmass in the south.
Well, it's a way of thinking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So off he went. He just sailed with the wind behind him. He sailed easterly direction.
Yep.
Then when they sighted New Zealand, still in November, I think, they could actually see snow on one of the Alps there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they couldn't land. It's so rough there. I went down there myself. It's very, very rough. It's very, very difficult landing there. So they kept on going north. and they sailed around a place called Cape Cowwind. In other words, the wind's not very good there. You've got to be very careful.
Yeah.
Until they came to calmer waters. This is when you go around the hook of the South Island, the northern part of the South Island.
Yeah.
Has a place called Golden Bay.
Yeah. Right?
Now, they call it Murderer's Bay, and I'll explain why in a minute. And they could tell that the Maoris were watching them. You know, they could see smoke. They could see that, well, you know, there's something. They knew they were there. But Tasman was under strict instructions not to make any aggressive moves, to try and be as friendly as possible.
Okay.
So they anchored there, and then they come ashore. They tried to come ashore, sorry. Now, we don't know. Everyone has stated that no one ever came ashore there. But Rudiger Mack, he wrote a paper, and he wondered whether they did come ashore. Because one of the drawings that Whitson did, he's an engraver, he's a historian, geographer, artist, everything. There's a bit of everything. And he did these microscopic drawings hidden inside a larger drawing, which showed, obviously showed European boats very close to shore.
Okay.
With some water casks. And it's a big hot topic in New Zealand. So he's been roundly criticised. But I had a look at his claims, and there seems to be a lot to it. Why would you put that in there, you know?
Yeah.
And what it appeared to me that they, if they didn't come ashore, they were very, very close to shore, where they were close enough to walk in the water, and that's where maybe it was a skirmish with the Maori. All right? Whether they got water or not, I don't know. Or whether they just quickly got back on the boat, it's a bit difficult to say. But they certainly were out there long enough to go ashore. Yeah, so we don't know. But the reason why he didn't put it in his log is because any confrontation would have been disobeying the instructions that Tasman had been given, that you weren't to engage in confrontation with the natives, you know?
Oh, right.
Unless you were protecting yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he didn't mention that in his log. But the next day, was something really significant happened. Now, they come closer ashore, but to the Maori, coming closer to shore was an aggressive manoeuvre.
Right.
And they were a very aggressive tribe, this one, because they'd come from the North Island, and they displaced the people where they were living. They actually had a village there near Wanui Bay, it's called, within Golden Bay. And they decided to issue, you know, Tasman a challenge by blowing their trumpets and blowing their conch shells. All right?
Yeah.
And Tasman's thinking, they're welcoming us. He didn't know it was a challenge. So he instructed his men to blow their trumpets and their horns, you know?
Yeah.
So when the Maoris heard that, they were accepting the challenge.
Okay.
So off they went in their boats, you know, canoes.
Yeah.
And they're much swifter and faster. They were outriggers as well. And they had more men on their canoes than the Dutch had on their boats. Now, as long as the Dutch were in their ships and they could put fire on them, they were fairly safe. But when they started to come close and they were looking at them, they looked fairly aggressive. They're fairly large warriors there.
Yeah, they got frightened.
They decided that, look, we better warn the other ship. So they sent some men in a boat to warn the other ship to get ready, to get your guns ready, get just in case. All right. And they didn't realise the swiftness of the canoes. And one of the canoes had actually gone around the other side of the ship. And maybe they didn't see that. And when the canoe was about halfway between the Maoris attacked this boat, the single boat, and they rammed it on both sides, knocking the people into the water, and they killed, well, according to Tasman, they killed four people. What he wrote in his journal, he said three of our men were killed, and a fourth was got mortally wounded. All right, that's really significant.
Yeah,
through the heavy blows. And then the murderers, having taken one of the bodies into their canoe, I think it's what he said, something like that.
Yeah.
So one of the sailors, that whom Tasman assumed was dead, was taken aboard of their canoe, whereas the other three who were dead were left in the water, right? Now, then Tasman's men opened fire with their cannon, their guns and whatever, and the Maoris, they fled. Now, a few of them probably got hit or, you know, there would have been some damage, but they made it ashore. So what happened to this fourth sailor that everybody assumed that was dead?
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.